This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello and welcome to the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information brought to you by Cornell University's Turfgrass Program in partnership with the New York State Turfgrass Association, brought to you on the web at www.nysta.org. I'm Frank Rossi, the Associate Professor of Turf Science here in the Department of Horticulture at Cornell University, and the following are observations and recommendations for the week of September 24th, 2012. Fall conditions continue to emerge both with declining temperatures and increasing precipitation. For those seeking recovery of summer damaged areas, it may be time to consider some new grasses. If the old standby Kentucky bluegrass has not been able to persist under your current management, then maybe you need to think about species more able to tolerate the warmer, drier conditions. Also, if you are considering or undergoing renovation, be sure to check soil conditions. Often with the increase in frequency of intense rain events that dump greater than 1 to 2 inches in a single event, you need to worry more about surface drainage, not as much internal drainage. Internally, unless you have a high percentage of sand, you can't expect much downward movement of water. However, this does buffer you against the longer dry periods we're experiencing. In the end, there are some big challenges ahead with our changing climate, and the business-as-usual approach may leave you out of business before you know it. Analyze your site issues carefully, do your research on grass species and varieties, and recognize your quality expectations and use of the site. You may only get one shot to rehab an area. Get it right. The Cornell Cooperative Extension update starts with Walt Nelson's Western New York report. Invasive cranefly adults are swarming abundantly. Adult estimates are about 1 to 2 per square yard. Sidewalks below nightlights are littered with 7 to 10 the following morning. Despite lots of egg laying, wintertime maggot mortality can still result in minimal spring damage. The Adirondack report from Emily Selleck and Lynn Wilson. 1.5 inches of rain after deep tine and core aerification certainly has helped. Deep tine with half-inch solid tines and followed up with 5-inch core tines at a 2x3 spacing. Top dressing and a nice rain to wash it in. Perfect start to preparing greens for winter. Some concern about areas that will not recover before the end of the growing season. The Capital Report from Dave Chinnery. We received over 2.5 inches of rain in many parts of the Capital District earlier this week, ending another of our mini dry periods. We had another sample of chinch bug outbreak on a home lawn. Brought into the office an inquiry about what to do when an overground pool breaks and the chemical-laden water damages the grass, and several questions about overseeding, fall renovation, seed versus sod. The Westchester Report from Jerry Giordano. Rains came in and off and on deluge over several hours and put a big dent in dry conditions that developed massive chinch bug damage is evident on many lawns through lab submissions, though lab submissions have dropped off. With the first numerous varmint damage reports on lawns, remember that skunks and raccoons may be seeking other soil invertebrates besides grubs, so sample before treating and following damage threshold levels for grub species. Requests for drought-tolerant grass species are higher, with callers thinking zoysia. Tall fescue has the advantage of being green during cool weather. Many landscapers performing massive renovations on damaged lawns. The regional update this week from Pat Vidim at the University of Massachusetts focuses on a white grub update, and this is excerpted from the University of Massachusetts management updates that you can get at the UMass Turfgrass Extension website. White grubs are starting to show up in many different areas. We took some samples from a golf course east of Springfield on Monday and found a very active population of Japanese beetles. Most of them were third-inch stars and feeding aggressively, and the skunks were having a field day ripping things apart as well. This is the first Japanese beetle population I have seen in several years. But a colleague of mine just reported that he only saw first and second instars, some Asiatic garden beetles, some Oriental, in an unirrigated field. My guess is that egg laying occurred on schedule from mid-July to mid-August in areas that were irrigated this summer, but that egg laying was delayed in unirrigated areas until the rains came in mid-August. In the latter case, grub development would also be delayed, so you might be seeing more small grubs than you usually see in mid-September. Now, as far as control, we're getting close to the cutoff time for using curative insecticides to control white grubs. For those of you who have access to triclofon or Dilox, it is the fastest-acting curative material available to us. Remember that many states do not permit its use on school grounds, and there are often additional restrictions, in part because it's highly soluble and therefore very mobile. Remember, too, that triclofon is very sensitive to water with high pH, so check your water and use an additive if necessary to buffer the solution. Many people have asked about using one of the neonicotinoids to reduce grub populations in the fall. That is, as a curative application. About 3 years ago, we asked the same question and applied clothianidin, imidacloprid, and thimethoxam to an area with an active grub population on the 17th of September. We also applied triclofon to other plots to provide a direct comparison to the industry standard. We came back 9 days after application and sampled the area. At that time, only the triclofan had reduced grub counts significantly compared to the untreated plots. But we also came back 3 weeks later, 30 days after application, and found that all three of the neonicotinoids had reduced grub populations by then. Imidacloprid was less effective than clothianidin or thiamethoxam, but did bring the numbers down. From this study, I conclude that clothianidin or thiamethoxam can reduce grub populations 10 to 30 days after application. This is not as quick as my colleague Dave Shetler at The Ohio State University claims, but it still provides something to consider for those of you who are experiencing grub damage now but cannot use triclofan. Gray leaf spot, an update from Rich Buckley at Rutgers University. Gray leaf spot continues to be a disease of concern for golf course superintendents. No doubt 2012 has been the best year for gray leaf spot in some time. The disease was diagnosed this week on samples from golf courses and sports fields in Delaware, New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut. Most of the damage is in established perennial ryegrass rough areas, but we have seen disease in fairway height turf and on sports fields. On affected sites, mow off as much of the damaged grass as possible. Make an application of estrobal urine or MBC fungicide, Heritage, Insignia, Compass, or Cleary's 3336, and lightly fertilize to enhance regrowth, seed to thin areas. Remember, seedling turf is very susceptible to gray leaf spot, so be sure to use blends of new and improved perennial ryegrass varieties. Most of them have some degree of gray leaf spot resistance bred into them. Use a blend just in case the resistance fails in one of the varieties. A little thinning is okay, but large dead spots are not. Be on alert. The window for gray leaf spot activity stretches into October. One last comment on gray leaf spot. The sample from southern Delaware was tall fescue. We normally don't see the disease in tall fescue this far north, but it's not impossible. We've also seen a disease on Hakanakloe, Japanese hakone grass. The hakone was submitted from a nursery grower. Interestingly enough, there were varietal differences in the susceptibility of the hakone in the nursery. Some varieties were hammered, while others tolerated disease quite nicely. Marty Petrovic, our own Marty Petrovic from Cornell University, gives us an update asking the question, does season influence the uptake of nitrogen? We began a research project asking the question, how much nitrogen can plants take up from a single N application? We asked this question with one other question in mind, does time of year influence N uptake? These questions have important practical and possibly legal implications. First, why should we apply more than nitrogen a plant can take up, especially if there is increased potential for leaching into groundwater? But even if you are less concerned about that, then why pay for fertilizer that is being wasted? Second, New Jersey and soon other states have passed legislation stating that 0.7 pounds of N is the maximum amount that can be applied in a single application. The study we set up was a study with Kentucky bluegrass growing in a sandy loam soil in straights and straight sand, either or, and applied nitrogen from a water-soluble source in 0.1 pound increments or 1/10 of a pound increments in mid-May, mid-July, and mid-October. The plots were irrigated regularly after application until no more nitrogen leached from the system. The plants were harvested and uptake amounts determined by harvesting and analyzing plant tissue. We found that time of year did not make a difference relative to amount of N taken up by the plant. Further, we found that for a sandy loam soil, applying any more than 0.7 pounds of N in one application led to increased leaching, and the plant was unable to take up any more N. For straight sand, the uptake of N was about 0.5 pounds before the N leached out, and the plant could not take it up. Best management practice. This study is still preliminary, but suggests that important BMP is to not apply more than 0.5 to 0.7 pounds of N per 1,000 square feet to any turf area with sand or sandy loam or well-drained soil in a single application. And finally, my Gazing in the Grass update this week starts with a note about Square One herbicide for Veronica control. Chatting with Andy Sinisak, extension weed specialist from Suffolk County, about Veronica filiformis control with Square One, he replied with the following. The labeled rate for Drive to control Veronica filiformis, which is not labeled in New York, is 0.7 pounds of active ingredient per acre. Normally, Drive would be applied in the spring for crabgrass control that it would probably primarily be used for. If an application were to be made after Columbus Day, then I would not expect to see results anyway until early the following spring. Extrapolating from our data that was reported in this article, you should expect about 80 to 85% control at 0.35 pounds of AI quinclorac, which is what you find in Square One. What is a BMP? A best management practice is an agreed-upon standard operating procedure designed to prevent pollution. This concept is a carryover from the Clean Water Act in 1977 and has persisted in agriculture and other industries as a standard of environmental quality. Thank you for joining me for the weekly installment of the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information. I'm Frank Rossi. I'm the Associate Professor of Turf Science in the Department of Horticulture at Cornell University, and I hope you have a great week.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.